Our next presentation will be dealing with preventing silicosis in a sandstone mines of India. And it will be presented by Prakash Tyagi. Prakash is a medical doctor and a public health professional and has studied at Jaipur University, India, Tashkent State Medical Institute, and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Over the last 10 years, Prakash has been working actively in the field of healthcare and integrated development in India. He is currently the director of an NGO based in Northwest India called Gravis. This organization promotes sustainable development in the areas of healthcare, water, and food security and education. Prakash?
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm honored to be here in this year's APHA meeting and to be able to make this presentation about silicosis. I'm going to tell the story of the Thar Desert of India, which is actually quite far from Mexico, the story we recently heard. I think should be 12,000 miles. But there are a lot of similarities in terms of working conditions, in terms of mines, although definitely from what I saw from the former presenter's slides, Mexico is definitely much more advanced in terms of the working conditions and mines. India is still very basic, and the problem of silicosis is very, very prevalent in India. Again, long way from California, 11,000 miles, four flights. On my way to California, I stopped over in Paris for another conference called the World Union Lung Health Conference last week. And I made the same presentation on silicosis, not same, but similar. And I realized that a lot of people think that silicosis is a disease of the past, and it doesn't really exist in the same kind of prevalence rates as it used to be, which is probably true for several countries, including the US, many parts of Europe, China, South Africa, where a lot of work has been done to control silicosis. But unfortunately, it's not the case for my part of the world, where silicosis is still highly prevalent. So again, going through the APHA formalities, I don't have any financial relationship to disclose with regard to this presentation. This, of course, is related to mining, a disease of workplace. So I will talk briefly about the mining scenario in India. I think the audience will be knowledgeable enough about silicosis, but I will briefly stop on silicosis and will talk about the disease. It's very important to talk about my organization that I represent, which is a very small organization. So I will talk about Gravis. And then I will go on some of the activities that we are doing to prevent, control, and eliminate silicosis. And then some directions for the future. Mining is a big industry in India. India is a country of a lot of people, as you know, 1.1 billion people. And it's an impoverished country. It's a country which has high unemployment rates. It's a country which has a large agricultural sector, but farming has problems. Farming is affected by droughts, by government regulations, by poverty. So a lot of farmers are losing their jobs, their livelihood. And therefore, industries such as mining become more and more prominent to get the, you know, the daily wage, the livelihood. Millions of people work in the country in mines in different states. The region that I'm talking about, the Thar Desert, is in a state called Rajasthan, which is in northwest India. It's a very dry, arid region, which receives very little rain, about 25 centimeters in a year. That is about 10 inches or 250 millimeters, whatever unit is used in the US for measuring rain. So it's a difficult area with a lot of problems and poverty. And there is a large mining industry in this state. The unofficial estimate of people working in this state in mines is 2 million, although the government figure is only about 500,000 people, but that's not true, like many government statistics are. So the estimated figure is about 2 million people. That's again a large number. The state has a population of about 60 million people. That's not one of the largest states in the country because there are many other states which are more, which have more population than 60 million. And again, Rajasthan is a major producer of copper, zinc, and bauxite in country. I'm going to talk about sandstone and marble mines because that is the area in which we work. There are a large number of sandstone mines and marble mines. Sandstone is pink in color, and if you have seen some of the famous New Delhi monuments, all of them have made by Rajasthan sandstone, like the India Gate or other monuments. White marble of Rajasthan is also very, very famous. The famous Taj Mahal of Agra has been built by Rajasthan marble in the 17th century or so. But there are problems in this industry, in the stone industry, stone mine industry. The estimate is that 250,000 people work in stone mines, sandstone mines. They are all underpaid, most of them. The daily wages in India are very, very low. It's about $2, but $2 a day. But most mine workers do not get that money because they are exploited and they do not know about their rights. Malnutrition is extremely, extremely common, and there are diseases linked to that among mine workers. Health safety is very, very poor. There are no health check posts. There are no regular health checkups. There are no preventative measures to control the dust exposure. And besides chronic diseases, there are, of course, injuries in mines. And for that, there are no arrangements and there are no first aid precautions. Occupational lung diseases are very, very common. Silicosis and asbestosis mainly, but in sandstone mines, it's silicosis, which is more prevalent. And this is the disease on which we are working. In addition to that, tuberculosis is a major problem, infectious disease, but it's very, very common in mines because of malnourishment and poverty and the conditions in which the mine workers live. And then the coexistence of the two diseases is very, very common, which we know as silicotuberculosis. Again, you would probably know about silicosis in detail, but briefly, it's one of the commonest forms of pneumoconiosis. It's an occupational lung disease, which is caused by long-term consistent inhalation of airborne silica, which is, of course, very, very common in Rajasthan mines. It has a typical symptom profile of a lung disease, characterized by short breath, pain in the chest, and fatigue. And then it also goes along with some general symptoms like loss of appetite and loss of weight, and also persisting low-grade fever. It is very, very identical to TB as well. So it is very, very difficult to differentiate it from TB. And there is a process of formation of silicotic nodules in the lungs, and then finally it goes towards fibrosis. It is an incurable disease, so it is an irreversible process. It cannot be completely treated, although the symptomatic relief is provided to the patients. Gravis, the organization that I work with, was founded in 1983, so this year is our 25th year, long time. We are working with the rural communities. We are not working with the urban communities in our part of the world because it's difficult for us to focus on both rural and urban areas. We work in villages, and we cover about 850 villages in five districts. District is a unit, administrative unit in India. And we reach about 1 million people with our programs. We have 10 small offices in the desert to cover and control our activities. We also partner with a number of local NGOs which are active in India. So we are currently working with 9 partners. And we started working on occupational lung health in 1993. That is about 15 years ago. 5 major objectives on which we focus. We are focusing on developing self-reliant rural communities so that they can sustain the initiatives on their own. Again, developmental activities with community involvement so that there is sustainability. The desert is very, very difficult, but it also has a lot of traditional knowledge in which people have survived for centuries, and we respect that wisdom, that knowledge. We try to build that with some modern science and technology, which we can provide. We work for the most vulnerable and needy people, and we also do a lot of networking and linkages within the state. Focusing on our methodology of working, there are 4 major strengths. Again, focusing on objectives that I talked about in the last slide, we do a lot of participatory work in which the community that we work with participates, and also local government and non-governmental organizations are key stakeholders. Capacity building is an important area of our work in the area of healthcare and in the area of other activities, and we do a lot of capacity building activities, and I talked about other two main points in my last slide. We are an integrated organization, and we do different types of things to improve life. We are not focusing only on healthcare, although healthcare is an important area of our work. We do a lot of work on water conservation because water is very, very scarce in the Thar Desert. People walk miles every day to bring a pitcher of water, like you can see in the slide. Healthcare is an important area of our work. We do education with setting up schools for children. We also work on agriculture and forestry. Animal husbandry is an important support to livelihood in the Thar Desert, so we work on that. And in all areas of our activities, we do trainings and capacity building activities. Being a drought-prone zone, drought relief and mitigation activities are important for us, and we also work on human rights, such as the rights of mine workers. India is an interesting country in terms of healthcare. It has a very difficult and a healthcare system which is full of disparities. It's an impoverished country, and in one way it is similar to the US healthcare system, which is also very advanced but has a lot of disparities. So that's where we see the similarity between India and the US. India's health spending, the government is trying to raise it to 2% of the GDP, but they have not been able to do it. It's about 1.5% of the GDP, which of course is very, very low compared to the US, which is about 16 to 17%. The interesting thing about India's health is that 80% of our health spending channelizes through private medical sector, which is of course quite good because they charge more. And about 20% of our health spending goes through the government sector. And on the other side, 80% of our population cannot access private care. It's only 20% people who can go to the private medical facilities, and the rest are dependent on the government services, which are, of course, not so good. So with this in view, health has always been a primary issue for us, for the organization, and we have been trying to organize different types of initiatives on healthcare since 1990. In the picture, you see a typical community health worker with a small medical kit that they are provided. So we are working on health. Specifically coming on silicosis, we have been advocating on the issue of health safety in mines since 1993. In 93, when we first, when the organization, I wasn't a part of the organization at that time because I was probably too young, but a group of people started doing this, and when they went to the mines, the exposure levels that they saw and the conditions of the mine workers that they saw were very, very shocking. And we started with a basic research of the health conditions of mine workers. But again, the issue was very, very troublesome because when we tried to identify partners, people just stayed away from us because of political problems, other issues, the government laboratories without which you can't really go ahead because your results are not certified, as you mentioned in your presentation. So, but after making some efforts and after examining 400 mine workers at that particular time, we were fortunate to find a partner with a partnership with an institute called National Institute of Occupational Health, which is based in Ahmedabad in India. So they took our results, our physical examination reports and our X-ray reports, and we found that mine workers who have spent more than 15 years of their life in mines, out of them 55% were suffering with silicosis. That's very, very high prevalence. And out of them, more than two-thirds were having a combination of both silicosis and tuberculosis. So the numbers were really high. And we published this report by the name of Profile of Sandstone Mine Workers in 1994, and that gave us a kind of a tool to take forward the advocacy with the government and mining authorities. Consequently, we did a second research in 2008, which has recently been completed and published, which is known as Silicosis, the Silent Slayer. I don't have extra copies of it, but if you would like to have them, you could meet me after the presentation, and I can take your cards and I can send you copies by email or by normal male. So in this study, we found similar findings. The prevalence rate from 55% has decreased to 45%, but not a lot of change. So still, there are a lot of problems in the minds. So after our first study in 1993, we started our health education program focusing on mine workers and also mine owners. But again, it was very, very difficult to get the attraction of people. People were so busy with their work, mine workers with their daily work, mine owners with their profits, and it was almost impossible to bring people into our health education sessions. So we tried a lot of different things, a lot of innovative things like street plays and innovative training materials. And gradually we got some response and people started coming to our health education sessions. Respiratory masks, again, just did not exist in Rajasthan mines 15 years ago. We have been promoting them by demonstrating the use of masks and also asking mine owners so that they make masks available in their mines. But besides that, it's not just the availability, it's the behavioral pattern of mine workers. It's very hot, the work is very exhausting, and they just did not like this extra burden on their bodies, on their noses. So a lot of work was done on changing this behavior and getting them into the habit of, you know, using masks. The other method that we have been promoting is wet drilling, which is very, very effective. If the water is poured on stone rocks, then the chances of silica flying into air reduces and the exposure reduces. But on the other hand, the problem is it's a drought-prone area and there is very little water. So what do we do to ensure that there is some water to pour on the rocks? So we have been promoting rainwater harvesting tanks in the mining areas. So if there is an adequate rainfall, a mine owner could store enough water that would last several months and that could be used on wetting the rocks. And then we filed a public interest litigation, a PIL, in the Supreme Court of India. It was filed in 2002, so it's been 6 years ago. It's still in process, but please don't be surprised. India is a country which has a very slow judicial system, again because of our population burden, and many times it takes years. But we are hopeful that the Supreme Court will give directions in our favor. What we are doing is that the government of India has made an act in 1952, which has a lot of health regulations which are not being followed. So our PIL focuses on revitalizing these regulations so that the mining authorities and the mine owners follow these regulations. One of the minor successes that we had was in 1997 when the government of Rajasthan, of this state, of this province, formed a pneumoconiosis control board with two major responsibilities. One, to ensure health safety through inspections, and two, to certify diagnosed cases of silicosis so that they can get compensation from the government and mine owners. But unfortunately, like all other government institutions, it's not working as properly as we would have liked it to. So hopefully, if the Supreme Court gives some strong directions, the control board will start working more properly. And after that, we are not only an advocacy organization, we are also an organization that provides medical care. It is important for us to provide medical care. It is important for us to go to the community with some solutions, because if we go to the community talking about only health education and preventive measures and we can't treat patients and we can't provide symptomatic relief, then the people do not believe in you. So we are doing outreach medical services by mobile medical units. And although the area is very large, the population is very large, but depending on our resources and capabilities, we are doing it once in a week, in which our medical team goes to a particular mine and examines patients. India is also a country which has a huge TB burden. We have 15 million people living with active tuberculosis, and a lot of them live in mining areas. So there is a large TB control program in India of WHO called DOTS. So we are trying to link DOTS with silicosis control because both diseases are interrelated. We also run a hospital, which is a multi-specialty hospital, which has most modern facilities, and we try to provide hospital care to silicosis patients, especially in the terminal stages of their life, to provide symptomatic relief. Although silicosis is incurable, some relief could be provided and the life could be prolonged to some extent. We also do nutritional support. because most silicosis patients are malnourished through nutritive foods and also medicines. We are also in the process of setting up a fully equipped diagnostic facility, which used to be our weakness in the past because we don't really have good diagnostic procedures for silicosis. But in the recent times, we have been lucky to find a partnership with an organization based in Germany. And with their support, we are going to set up this diagnostic facility, which should come up in a few months' time. And then we do a lot of networking, and my presentation in this conference is a part of that networking at the state level, at the national level, and also at the global level. We are trying to make sure that people know about silicosis prevalence, and we can take this momentum forward. Sorry. So some of the future directions that we have thought for ourselves. India is a difficult country with a lot of developmental challenges, but we want to make sure that occupational lung health is mainstreamed into that overall developmental process and it's not neglected. We are going to focus on education and capacity building continuously, and for that we keep innovating our training materials. We keep developing new training techniques with our own resources and external assistance. Research for us is important. I remember yesterday's statement from Sir Michael Marmot's presentation that research is an important tool to gather evidence so that you can have strong advocacy with the government. We would like to continue our service delivery through our medical services, which is difficult because of resources. The medicines are expensive and the equipments are expensive and the people can't pay. But we are trying to do that, and hopefully we will be able to continue that. And finally, we are thinking of developing a specialized cadre of community health workers which look into occupational lung health with the community. We have a cadre of 517 community health workers working with us, and we are trying to find a group of experienced health workers who can take the higher level of occupational lung health. Finally, I will be going towards the conclusion of my presentation with this WHO definition of health, which is very important for health and for chronic diseases, and in the case of silicosis. So it's not just about the disease and its symptoms, it's a lot of other surrounding factors that we need to focus on in order to eliminate silicosis. And finally, I will once again go back to the fascinating presentation of Sir Marmot yesterday. He concluded by saying that it is important to dream, and it is good to dream. So through our holistic efforts, we dream that one day we will be able to eliminate silicosis in India and maybe in other parts of the world. Thank you very much. Can take any questions.
We have more than time to take some questions, so comments?
I'm interested in what kinds of respiratory protective equipment that you are trying to encourage the workers to use?
It's a very basic respiratory mask, and it doesn't really cost too much. In the terms of the cost, it is about $2, approximately 100 rupees. Not easily available, though. A lot of suppliers, a lot of markets do not have that. But in the past, we have made some linkages with the suppliers, and now it is easily available in the markets. So it's not a cost which is a major issue, although it is a major cost for a mine worker. So if you would ask a mine worker to buy a mask, he or she is losing one day's earning. So, but it should be the mine owner's responsibility that they provide these masks to mine workers. But besides that, of course, there is this behavioral issue. It's very, very difficult to ensure that people use these masks. They do use it for some time, and then they just leave these masks. So it's very basic equipment. Yeah. It's similar to what Ingrid showed. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I got two questions. One of which is kind of a yes or no. In the marble mines, did you find any evidence of silicosis there? And if so, was it because of cross work with sandstone areas? And the other is a little more involved. What happens to the sandstone after it's mined? Where does it go?
The prevalence of silicosis is lesser in marble mines, but it is there. But the silica exposure is slightly lesser because there is not a lot of drilling, which is more common in sandstone mines. The work is more manual in the marble mines, and therefore the probability of silica going into air is slightly lesser. But yet, there is silicosis in marble mines. And our work goes to marble mines as well. But since the prevalence is much more higher in sandstone mines, we are focusing more on sandstone mines. And in terms of where does sandstone go, sandstone is consumed locally within the state of Rajasthan. If you would see at the local houses, all of them are made by sandstone of the local area. Bricks are not used in that part of India, and it's just sandstone. And then sandstone also goes to major cities of India for, so to speak, lavish constructions like hotels or palatial houses. It is also exported to a number of European countries.
My name is David McAteer. You spoke about wet drilling. I'd like to ask the question of how successful you've been in getting that implemented. And then secondly, perhaps when I stepped out, you mentioned the size of the companies that are operating the mines in this area. Are they large or medium or small?
Wet drilling has been very effective in our experience, and it definitely reduces, airborne silica particles in that area after the water is poured on the rocks. And because drilling is not done all the time, and it's the manual work which takes place afterwards, after the drilling is done, after the rocks are broken into some sort of pieces. So if that can be done with some water on the rocks, a lot of silica exposure could be avoided. This is our experience. But I have also read in the literature that in other parts of the world, wet drilling has been quite successful in terms of controlling silicosis. In terms of these mines, their sizes, they are basically very small mines. They are given to mine owners by the government on long-term leasing periods. And there is a lot of corruption in that. People can get these mines, which are actually very, very productive, for very small amounts of money through these government links. Average size of a mine in terms of people working in it would be about 20 to 30 people. So that is the average size. There are some larger mines which would have 50 to 100 people. But there are thousands of such, you know, mines or quarries would be more appropriate word, which exist in that area.
Susan Smith, University of Tennessee. What is it practical to recommend the use of water and drilling when that would consume a substantial amount of water when you're in an area that's so limited in water? Is that realistic as far as being a primary prevention method in your area?
Right. I talked about that in my presentation as well, and I admitted that we are a drought-prone region, and water is a major, major challenge. However, we need to choose our priorities, and we need to balance these priorities with some sort of justification. And therefore, we are only focusing on rainwater harvesting. We are not suggesting that water should come in mines from external sources, which sometimes would cost money as well. Water is sold in Rajasthan. So we are focusing on rainwater harvesting, water which would have washed away anyway if there are no measures to harvest that in the mines. So if that could be harvested in some sort of tank, and if that could be used for wetting the rocks, that's what we are suggesting. But you're absolutely right. Water is the most precious commodity in the Thar Desert.
I have a question.
Yes.
In your research, have you been able to measure exposure before and after, for example, this type of a mitigating process of wetting the stone, as well as outcomes that show that have been any changes in the behavior of the individuals after your training?
Yes, we have measured the exposure level, and I will not be able to give the correct data right now. I don't have it with me. But we definitely have measured the progress, the exposure levels before our interventions, and what is happening right now. The two studies that we have done, one was in 1993-94, and the recent one is in 2008. So we have definitely measured the progress. There are, of course, some changes, some successes in terms of behavior change. And our work is integrated, so it includes the socioeconomic aspects as well of mine workers' lives and not only the medical aspects. So there have been some changes, but the change has been very, very slow. In terms of prevalence, as I said in the presentation earlier, the prevalence rate in our opinion has decreased from 55% to 45% for the people who have spent more than 15 years in their in the mines. So there is some change, but it is slow, and there is still a long way to go. Yes,
Do you know the average age of the workers in the mine?
Yes, it is an estimate, but most people die by the age of 45 years. Okay. Yeah. If they continue to do work in mines. If they leave the mines at the earlier stages, then there is a probability that they will live longer. There are accelerated forms of silicosis as well, which could sometime develop within 5 years of exposure when the exposure is very, very high. But that's rare. So people who are spending more than 15 years of their lives in the mines, most of them die by 45. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.